Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
There you have it. The Edmonton Oilers are in sell mode. They dealt away goalie Cam Talbot for Anthony Stolarz of the Philadelphia Flyers in order to clear up salary cap room. That'll fit defenseman Andrei Sakharov back in the lineup and under the salary cap now that he's back from injury. But can the Oilers, under interim general manager Keith Gretzky, reasonably do much else besides give players away for middling draft picks to try to clear salary off the books? That is, if anybody wants those players at all. Other questions. Should Gretzky, brother of the great one, Wayne, be seriously considered as the next permanent GM of the Oilers? And it's unlikely Ken Hitchcock will be back next season as head coach. So what sort of coach should the Oilers target this time around?
I'm Jim Matheson.
I'm Rob Tichkowski.
And I'm Craig Ellingson. I talk to these hockey beat writers for the Edmonton Journal and the Edmonton Sun about these topics in the Oil Spills podcast for Tuesday, February 19th, 2019. So, it was a long weekend. Family day. My wife's working. Me and the son. I give him the option. Do you want to go to see the Oilers sign autographs? And I say Oilers, see them sign autographs, because I showed him a picture of the lineup and it was like, do you want to stand in that? He's like, no way. Let's go to the Oil Kings game instead. Okay, so we went to the Oil Kings game. But knowing that there are thousands of people, and I kind of wish I went to see just to see it for myself. I hadn't actually been to one of those Oilers autograph sessions in the mall since I was a child. I wanted to see how many people were there because, from the looks of it, the place was packed. But at Rogers Place at the same time, the Oil Kings game had a very good crowd too. We sat in the upper bowl, which they had to open up. It's family day, I get it. They had Star Wars going on. But hockey, and my point in bringing all this up here is this obviously is a hockey town that we're in. They can fill them all, and they can, do a very good job of getting a lot of people into Rogers Place for a junior hockey game. Here we are. Hockey town. We were talking before we came in to record the podcast, talking with one of the photographers, talking about, the weather and how cold it is, and bring up, what's the weather like on the other side of the planet right now, too? Is this polar vortex reaching down into Russia as well? And then, the conversation goes over to Siberia. Yeah, well, in Siberia, all they have to do is get through this cold weather, play hockey, and go out into the streets and fight after going to the bar or whatever. That's a stereotype. But, it wasn't all that long ago when the Wild West was here, and that's kind of what people did here, too. We had hockey in Canada, let's say, 100 years ago or more, and that was about it. And you could go to the bar, and I'm sure you could get into a scuffle and stuff like that. Anyway, so some things never change, and here we are. Talking about this hockey team, the Edmonton Oilers, who can't win a game, it seems. They come back from an Eastern road swing with nothing. But they're still in the race. Technically, it's not impossible, but it's very unlikely. Just as, probably a little bit more unlikely now than it was a week ago.
Well, if they had just reel in one team, it would be fine. But there's like four teams in front of them. And those teams eventually will be playing one another. Well, the Oilers aren't playing those teams. Mm-hmm. So they pick up points, and the Oilers can't do anything about it. So I don't know. I see nothing hopeful in the Oilers putting together a winning streak like St. Louis or like Arizona or like Chicago, who won like seven in a row. I just don't see it. Certainly not from since the new year started. I haven't seen that where they're winning a lot of games. So they can talk all they want about, all they need is three wins in a row. Well, where are those three wins in a row coming from?
Well, they're coming in St. Louis and Chicago, aren't they?
They can't win at home, and their next three games are at home. So they've lost 11 of the last 13 at home, so are they suddenly going to win three in a row? I don't know.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's been desperately close forever. Like, you know, they've just been 6 points out, but they've been 6 points out for about 5 weeks now, and they just don't do anything about it. And, you know, yes, everybody else is stalled, but I looked at the, they're the right now over the last 10 games, they're the worst team in the league, and they're sinking. They're just a couple of points out of last place overall. So those typically aren't the teams you would expect to, you know, go 8-1-1 and get yourself back in this race. I mean, like, mathematically, it's right there. It's not even that far away. You know, they sweep this homestand, they'll probably be 2 or 3 points out with, you know, 20 games to go. But they haven't done a thing in the last, you know, 6 wins in 25 games. So, you know, those aren't the hallmarks of a team that's about to rise up. And, you know, they've added a couple of guys now. So Sekera and Gagne, let's see what they add to the mix. But, yeah, I mean, mathematically they're still alive, but they haven't shown a thing in the last little bit to suggest that they're going to do anything with it.
I mean, my question always is why, but, you know, no one has the answer. Yeah. Obviously, if the coach knew why, we would be seeing
the
some
roster
things.
Is not good enough.
Yeah, it's everything.
Yeah. I mean, you can say all you want. They try hard. They work hard. The bottom line is this roster is not good enough. And when you start the first 2 months of the season, often teams get off and they get a, you know, they start winning games, and then as closer you get to Christmas, the pace of the game moves up a little bit. The minute you get into January, the pace of the game is way up there, and these are teams that are trying to make sure they get in the playoffs. And the Oilers haven't been able to keep up, and they haven't been able to keep up because they can't score enough, and their goaltending is only average. They don't have a goaltender like St. Louis does with this Binnington, who wins every game he plays now. You know, you needed one of those goalies just to win you games. And I don't think the goaltending's been bad, but I don't think that they've won them a lot of games either, where mm-hmm. the other team is, like, on the road trip where Matt Murray won the game against the Oilers for Pittsburgh, where McElhinney won the game for Carolina, and where Leonard was better than Koskinen in Brooklyn. So unless one of those goalies gets on a hot streak and has only given up one or two a game, I just don't see it.
Because, you know, the game against the Islanders, like you said, just, you know, the effort was there. You know, I think the line was that you might have even outplayed the Islanders, but they obviously lost the game 5-2. And mostly because, well, they just don't have the horses to do it. So where do you get these horses from? Obviously, you know, the team just finished firing it's been a month now since they fired Peter Chiarelli, going on a month. Now the key is, I mean, whether it's, you know, obviously it's Keith Gretzky right now sitting in the interim chair. How they go about acquiring the pieces to, you know, move on and somehow move up. You know, plenty of talk right now about Jesse Puljujärvi and, you know, him being on the block, probably. And whether or not you think he should stay or go, I think the key is, whether they keep him or trade him, is to get him in a situation where he can blossom. And that's going down to the AHL, is it not?
Well, it is, but he hasn't exactly blossomed in the AHL either. Mm-hmm. I think you have to prove you're clearly too good for the...
It's because he's staying up here all the time.
You're too good for the American League before you come up and play significant minutes. And what the Oilers are balancing here is they waited too long on Yakupov, hoping he would come around, and he never did. And then by the time they traded him, they got a third-round draft pick. You know, they were selling low, and they got all they could get from St. Louis. He's played 3 years now in the NHL, well, 2.5, I guess, 137 games. But there comes a point where you have to say, is he an NHLer, or are we just wasting our time here? So this season has, you know, been much like all the other ones. He's got 4 goals, you know, and like I said, when Jesse scores a goal, it looks like he's the most surprised guy in the building, which isn't a good thing if you're an NHL player. And, you know, so they're at that tipping point with him where, you know, if he's Yakupov and you think he's Yakupov, then you better trade him this summer.
Before
you go through another year hoping he's going to come around, and he doesn't.
Yeah, because these scouts, like, they're smart hockey people. Like, the pro scouts aren't looking at his stats line. They aren't looking at who his line mates are. They're looking at what he does on the ice. And they see these big wide loops where it's like a cruise ship turning around in the middle of the ocean, and they see a guy who's, skating 5 feet away from the puck carrier where passing to him doesn't accomplish anything. They see a guy who's cutting the shift short, who doesn't win a lot of puck battles. I mean, they're looking at him as you know, his skills as a player, and just haven't seen a whole bunch from him yet. And like, everybody wants to make excuses. They haven't handled him very well. They brought him up too soon, as they do with everybody, because the roster's so thin, and he's, you know, has this man's body. They thought he would adjust, but like, I've been watching the guy for 3 years, and I can't remember once seeing him do something out there that makes you think, wow, this kid's going to be something really special. He's just a big guy who skates pretty well in a straight line and has a good shot. And beyond that, I haven't seen improvement in almost any other aspect of his game in 3 years. And even if you're playing on a third line or a fourth line or not getting any minutes, you should still be improving as a player. And you should still be, like, as a third or fourth liner, don't cry about your line mates. You know, you're playing against third and fourth liners, so he should be feasting on those guys. You know, he's not against Drew Doughty and the best, you know, defenders in the league, or he's not against, you know, the other team's top line. He's against the other team's bottom six. So as a fourth overall pick, you should be excelling in that. And he just doesn't excel anywhere. And he's played a lot. He's played 20 games on the second line this year. He played 20 games on the first line last year. He's getting the chances. He just doesn't do anything with it.
So you guys want, you're selling Puljujärvi now, right?
If
you
guys are trying this summer,
yeah,
I think this summer to see what might be out there. But you'd have to put something with Puljujärvi to get.
Jakubov got a third round pick back by himself.
But you'd have to give him a draft pick and Puljujärvi to get something better, because you're not trading Puljujärvi for, you know, all your, you know, as somebody on the radio said today, he says, I don't even know if they'd get Miles Wood for Jesse Puljujärvi. So I, you know, the way he's playing, and you know, he should have been in the minors. The flip side is, he should have been in the minors playing, but he's practicing every day with an NHL team. You would still think that in those practices, mm-hmm. he would be picking up some things he's not good at, and if that means working, you know, cycles off the boards, using his 6'4" frame, keeping the puck away from the opposing team, and then going to the net with it, or saying, I'm passing the puck to you, and now you go by this defenseman. You try to get by this defenseman and use your size. But there's nothing like that. I don't see that either, where he gets the puck 20 feet from the net, and invariably he starts veering towards the boards, as opposed to saying, I'm taking on this defenseman. Or he defers to, well, I better pass it to somebody else. So that's confidence, but that's also not having enough, you know, I guess, faith in your own ability, which you certainly had in junior, and which Sebastian Aho in Carolina, who played with him, said, I saw that all the time in junior. It's not there. And I don't know where you get that, if it's suddenly going to go down to the minors and you're going to get it. All I know is in Bakersfield, they got a pretty good first couple of lines. So you're suddenly going to take somebody off those first couple of lines just to play Puljujärvi there?
Josh know. Curry came up. That disrupts
Yamamoto's
things.
Playing in a third line there. They're going so good. Mm. So all they do is win.
And the AHL team, I mean, as much as you like to keep that unit together, like I just said, Josh Curry is up with the Oilers now. I assume he was in the top two lines.
Yes, he was. Know,
you're going to be feeding the NHL. You're going to be – the purpose of that team mostly is to aid the Oilers team. However, I mean, I get it. You want to keep – you know, obviously these players are developing down there too, and keeping that streak alive is, you know.
I think what they're looking for in the minors is to keep all their young players in the minors as long as they can, and only bring up players who can be bottom six players, mm-hmm. because then you can move them around. Whether you're talking Gambardella or Brad Malone or Josh Curry or Philip or Patrick Russell, and they want to keep their young players down there now. They finally decided, you know what? Tyler Benson, I don't care if he gets 2 points every game. He's not coming up. Yamamoto, stay down there for the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. Don't come up. And I think what they're looking for is to see if some of those minor league players making $650,000 can be NHL bottom six players, at least fourth line players, a lot less money than they're paying some of the fourth line players they've got now, mm-hmm. so they can save some money.
Did Hitchcock ever say what he saw in Puljujärvi that he said, bring him up to the team? Because obviously Puljujärvi was down before McClellan got fired for a couple of games. And then all of a sudden, well, then, as we all know, Hitchcock said, bring him up, because I want to work with him here. What did he ever say?
Yeah,
what
that was? He likes big wingers, and he just thought that he would be benefiting more from being around, because the things that he struggled most with were NHL time and space, which you're not going to adjust to in the AHL because it's not NHL time and space. So he thought that bringing him up here, you know, he's the guy, like everybody knows, who kind of talked management into bringing him back. But for a guy who had all this faith in him, he sure doesn't play him a whole bunch. You know, he leaves him out there for, you know, 5 minutes unless the game is close, and then he plays less than that. So, yeah, he likes big wingers who can skate a little bit, and he thought that he could work with him and mold him and turn him into, you know, a player. But, you know, Todd McClellan is also an excellent coach, and he had a lot of time with him and couldn't draw it out of him either. So, you know, that might have been a big mistake.
And I don't think it's incumbent on the coach, just because you're big and you can skate and you're fourth overall pick, to suddenly give you more than 10 minutes. The object is, show me you deserve 12. Show me you deserve 15. Show me you deserve to be on the first power play unit, not the mop-up guy. And I agree with Rob. You do with what you're given, and then show in those few shifts you get that you're, as the game wears on, you shouldn't be on that line. You should be playing on another line.
Yeah, I mean, I think what hurts them is they're kind of semi trying to convince themselves that they're still in this playoff race, and you can't just abandon everything to develop. Because almost the other side of the coin, you look at it now, like, you know, lose three more games, and you can tell yourself you're out of it. Okay, then bring Puljujärvi up and play him 20 straight games with McDavid to end the season, and then either pull him out of his funk or up his trade value or do something on that front with him. So. But, you know, you can't afford to throw these games away when, you know, you're only 5, 6, 7 points out of a playoff spot with 25 to go. You have to think team first and maybe the miracle of making the postseason. So, I mean, they're kind of, they got a lot of layers to this thing, and none of them are very good right now.
Now, the trade deadline is coming up in a week, and like, you know, most NHL teams, the owners are up against the salary cap, or they would probably obviously want to clear as much salary off the books as they can in preparation for the offseason, or who knows what's out there on the trade market now that they would reasonably be able to expect to maybe bring in. What do you think the Oilers can do? I mean, I don't think anybody's going to be trading for Brandon Manning or Kyle Brodziak or Tobias Reeder, but I don't know. Maybe there's somebody.
Petrovich maybe is a seventh defenseman, right, with a contract that's running out. I think you could trade Zach Cassian
for sure. Yeah.
If you decided we're not paying $1.9 million for a fourth line player. Now Zach has played quite well the last little while with Connor McDavid. I certainly. He's played better with Connor than he has on some of the other lines.
Yeah.
So maybe you don't. But his marketability right now is probably pretty high. I think you can maybe trade him. I think Matt Benning is probably a defenseman you could trade if you think you've got lots of defensemen. Let's put it this way. If they think that Caleb Jones can replace Matt Benning next year, maybe you try to trade Matt Benning now to a team, you know, where Matt could play in the bottom, you know, the third pairing. But, you know, their hands are tied with some of these players. You know, they're not – none of the older players, when you're 29th place team, none of those players are jumping out at you and said, oh, we've got to have this guy. So it's difficult.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's basically clearing money. To me, I would just – I'd have, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7 guys that are untouchable and then just say, have at her, clean this roster out, start again. It's not good enough. Let's not cling to – fringe players that we think maybe not. It's not working. It's not good enough. So I would just, if I was Keith Gretzky, I'd say, okay, you know, you can't have McDavid, Dreisaitl, Klefbom, Nurse, Larson, maybe, I don't even know, and then just say anybody else you want. Let's
the
have
thing
it.
Is, the one player who is a trade chip is Darnell Nurse for a top flight fort winger.
Yeah, you could get
I mean, if they went to Winnipeg and you said, you trade me Ehlers for Nurse. and two young players the same age, and you know, you're sacrificing a defenseman, but you're finally getting a top six winger. So it's 50-50. It's an uncomfortable position for Keith Gretzky, who's had to come in and clean up some of the messes here. And I thought he did a nice job trading Cam Talbot for, mm-hmm. you know, getting rid of the money for a player that they obviously didn't want to sign again, for a goaltender who's, you know, making $761,000 for a goaltender making 4.1. So that's, you know, he cleared up some money there. So, but every year is the same, as Rob points out. They go into this thing saying, okay, we're out of it. Now, which of our players would, do you think anybody would want? Last year it was Patrick Maroon and, you know, some other guys. And you know, they traded Brandon Davidson and Mark Letestu. Contracts were up and you know, managed to trade them. But they didn't get a lot for
you never do at the deadline because you know, people need
their. You got a third-round pick for Davidson. You got a Pontus Aberg for Letestu, who didn't last long. And Patrick Maroon, you got a third-round pick and a college player. So they didn't get much for that.
Yeah, and they need, like, literally three scoring wingers.
They need players who can play at worst next year and be on their team and be successful. Yeah. And I would be going to Chase on right now and saying, here's your two-year contract at $1.75 million or whatever, and you want to sign it right now, and at least you can plug him in and say, okay, worst year on the third line, and you got, you know, that's not a lot of money, and then that's one less thing to worry about. Now, Chase on, we haven't mentioned him. I'm sure the teams would take Chase on it.
Yeah, he's got experience.
But what are you going to get? You're just going to get a draft pick back.
Yeah, they literally need it. They need a first line winger and two second line wingers. So, on a limited budget with not much to trade. So, good luck filling that.
How likely is it that the owners will just give Keith Gretzky the general manager's job outright?
Unlikely. Yeah. I don't know if he wants it. Unlikely. Well, at least he publicly says he doesn't want it. I think he's a way sharper. I think, you know, you'd like to stand up for Keith against some the backlash of the old boys club. And there is obviously some of the old boys club in there. But, you know, for the fan to think he only got the job because he's Wayne's brother, he's worked in this business for quite some time. And the people you talk to say he's pretty smart at what he does, understated and smart at what he does. So I think he's, you know, he's had to carry the fact that he's Wayne's brother, which is never easy when you're the brother of a superstar, and getting jobs is the same thing. But he was pretty good at what he did in Boston, and he's not working for the Oilers because Kevin Lowe said, let's hire Keith Gretzky. Peter Chiarelli brought him in, and you know, he did draft some pretty good players in Boston when he was there. Charlie McAvoy, I think he had a pretty good hand at mm-hmm. drafting.
He's really
McAvoy
good on the amateur
and
side.
Jake DeBrusk, and now certainly those other two players they picked when they had three first-rounders, you know, didn't pan out, but certainly some of them did.
He was responsible for Pasternak, too, wasn't he?
He was, yes.
Mm. Yeah, because, you know, obviously the last time the Oilers went out and hired a general manager was 4 years ago after this season, and between the draft, winning the draft lottery for McDavid, and a few days later, poof, Peter Chiarelli is the new general manager. There wasn't, you know, I'd have to go back and scour around, but I'm not sure who the names other candidates were at the time. But obviously the Oilers have given themselves more time than just 4 or 5 days to decide what their approach will be to finding a new GM. I mean, obviously we've already thrown the names out there back when Chiarelli was fired, the likes of Ron Hextall and Mark Hunter and Keith McCrimmon on and on, or sorry, Kelly McCrimmon on and on, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously, Gretzky's been entrusted to make some deals now. Obviously, trade deadline here and whatnot. But, anyway. But I know that you have written and have said he's a sharp guy. And he's not here because he's Wayne's brother.
He'll definitely be in still with the organization, let's put it that way, even if they bring in another general manager.
Yeah, he'll keep his spot.
Keep the spot as a, in the amateur side of things, because I think he knows what he's doing.
Okay. You know, and on, in the same vein, you know, Ken Hitchcock's the head coach of the Oilers, but I can't imagine he'll be the coach next year.
No. No, I think he's... Hey, it's a tough gig, and I think he kind of thought, you know, he had a lot of confidence in himself. He thought, you know, I can come in here, I can fix this thing, and things got off to the great start, and it was this wonderful honeymoon period, but everything is coming back to reality now, and he's a smart hockey guy. He can see what's here, and it's a hard gig, and he's, what, pushing 70, so I would be, and a new GM is going to want his own guy, so I think just all of that adds up to him just coming in and trying to do a favor and doing the best he can with this roster, but you know the roster is the roster, and it doesn't matter who the coach is. It's going to be pretty tough to, you know, take the whip to this thing and get it into the playoffs.
It might be kind of hard to say who do you think the coach should be, because obviously the general manager will dictate that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there, you know, obviously it's. I would imagine that part of any new general manager's you know desires would be somebody he's worked with before, but.
I know who I'd hire.
Who would you hire?
Ralph Krueger.
Yeah.
Bring Ralph back.
Is that realistic, though? Probably
it is,
not.
It is, probably. I noticed his Southampton football team is in relegation mode right now. So, and they have new owners the last couple of years from the lady who hired him in the first place. So, yeah, I would not mind that one bit. So I agree with Rob. You know, a new GM's coming in to hire his own coach. And the last couple of coaches they've had have been veterans.
Yeah.
You know, Todd and Hitch. And then before that, it was Dallas, who hadn't been a head coach, and that didn't work out real well. And then before that, Ralph had not been a head coach, but had been in, you know, coached Switzerland forever, you know, in the Olympics and stuff. So, you know, I don't know. I guess it depends which general manager gets the job. And, you know, it always comes down to how do I know this guy I want to hire as my coach when I'm the general manager?
Yeah.
It'll be somebody he's worked with before.
Yeah, you know, obviously the McClellan and Hitchcock, you know, obviously McClellan paid with his job, and you know Hitchcock hasn't had much success kickstarting this roster either, except at the beginning when he was here. Yeah. I know the name Chris Knobloch had been thrown out there before. You threw that out there, I think.
Bob Stauffer would be throwing it out there.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I guess...
Play for the Golden Bears.
Do they go for a younger coach, a different style of coach?
That's the thing. Yeah. It's just instead of who the coach is what kind of coach are they looking for?
I think he's very qualified, and he coached Connor McDavid, which is not a bad thing. So he was the most successful junior coach going for 4 years before he went to the Flyers. So, certainly it would be a possibility. I don't... You know, like I said... Coaching is one thing, players are another thing. I don't care who's coaching the team if they don't have good enough players.
Yeah, because they've had some pretty good coaches come through here. Krueger was a good coach, and you know Hitchcock's a great coach. McClellan's a good coach. It's not like they've struck out on their coaches; just they just haven't had the players.
That's our Oil Spills podcast for today. You can listen to our show via iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud.